feet. Knocks off number one Indiana.
Brent Spillane continues to be the hottest thing in college baseball.
The Illini win it over Ohio State 28-21 at the Horseshoe in Columbus.
Darren for the tie. He got it.
Oh,
he got it. 80-80.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to episode 2 of season 2 of Oski Talk. My name's Anthony Pasquale with Patrick Catazone. We've got a really good episode lined up for you, right, Patrick?
Absolutely. We have Robert from Illini Board. He's here to talk about training camp, his expectations for the team this year, along with the biggest news, Marquez Beeson getting injured at training camp this week. And we're going to talk about that right now, since that's really the only big Illini news right now. No recruits. Basketball finished up their trip to Italy. And if you haven't heard our last episode, we talked a lot about those two things. But Marquez Beeson obviously being out is going to be a huge deal when it comes to the cornerback depth and who we play this year, especially I feel like in the nickel. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely a huge loss for this defense, especially since last episode, just 3-4 days ago, we were talking about how important he's going to be for this defense. And it's going to be a pretty big loss. The team's already without Bobby Rountree this season, probably for the rest of his career, barring some miraculous comeback from him, and losing another key defensive player, even without ever taking a snap in an Illini uniform. It's probably going to be a big hurt for this Illini team.
Yeah, you just got to think, like, are we cursed? Because this is the first top 100 player that we've had in a long time, and of course he gets hurt in training camp, but make sure you stay tuned for the interview, because we'll talk a little bit more about it and what Robert thinks and potentially how long he'll be.
Well, let's get right to it and send it to Robert from Illini Board next on Oski Talk.
Joining us this week on Oski Talk is Robert from Illini Board. Robert, first of all, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me. My brain is full of all things Illini football in August, so let's empty it.
Awesome. Well, I feel like we should start off with the big news today and Marquez Beeson getting injured. Where do you think this kind of leads the corner depth chart with him out, potentially? I mean, we don't know how long, because Lovie won't say, but...
Yeah, I'm not hope against hope that it's not awful. Like, this time last year, Jamal Milan went down with a knee injury. Everybody on, you know, he got carted off. Everybody thought it was ACL. It turned out to not be ACL, and he came back for the fourth game on. So I'm just going to cross fingers and toes and hope that it's something like that. Depth-wise, yeah, it's a big concern, mostly because there's already two corners who are out, freshman Joseph Thompson and sophomore Dylan Wyatt. Neither has participated yet at camp. I don't know what injuries they're rehabbing. Lovie doesn't really talk about injuries. He only does it if it's a season-ending injury. Otherwise, he'll say, not a season-ending injury. I don't talk about other injuries. So it's going to be the hockey thing where we'll get, you know, lower body injury or whatever.
Right.
But, yeah, it's, you know, yes, Beeson wasn't starting. The starters are entrenched from last year, Nate Hobbs and Quan Martin. But, yeah, behind them now it is Nick Walker Jr. and a bunch of walk-ons. So that's a big issue. Hopefully they get Thompson back. I mean, I guess there is Devin Witherspoon, the guy who just joined. He'll have to he has to basically sit for the first five practices. If they're in pads, he can't be in pads. So it'll be a bit before he can join. But, I mean, maybe he can be a contributor. They just got to find somebody, because they'll rotate four cornerbacks and they don't have four healthy scholarship cornerbacks right now.
Yeah, and we'll say Beeson does, it wasn't a serious injury. Do you think he has any shot of potentially jumping Martin in the depth chart at all?
I don't think so, because, okay, Quan Martin was my guy in last class. Like, I do this award I give for the overlooked guy in each recruiting class. It went to him. I loved this film. I thought he was a four-star kid. It did not surprise me at all that he started 8 games as a freshman. It did not surprise me at all that he had 3 interceptions. Like, I think he could be second to Al Broski on the team interceptions chart by the time he's a senior. I just think he's great. So, as the world's biggest Jartavius Martin fan, yes, no, I don't think Beason was going to jump it. But Beason can make some plays in practice that make your head spin because he's as athletic. I mean, that's why he's a top 100 recruit. He's as athletic as anybody we've recruited in the last 10 years, and he can, you know, stop and start on a dime. So, yeah, he was going to be a big part of it and rotate in a fair bit. And if he's out, that's a blow.
Let's talk about, I feel, the other big storyline from camp in the quarterbacks. I noticed on your depth chart that you posted, I believe today, you have Robinson over Williams even and the second stream spot. You think do you really see Robinson at the end of camp really being that second string?
Yeah, I guess I'm the ride for Matt Robinson guy. Like my pre-camp depth chart had him number one on it. Here's my take. Brandon Peters obviously has the best arm. He can run a little bit. He's more athletic than he's not Wes Lunt in the pocket. He's not just going to sack or throw it. But running is not his forte. Isaiah Williams is electric with the ball in his hands and everything we expected. And the crowd at camp will sometimes laugh when he makes a move. It's like, how is that even humanly possible? But he's thrown a ton of picks, and you know, obviously, I mean, he's a week in learning the offense. It's seven times more complicated than his high school offense. He's going to be swimming in his head for at least 6 weeks. Matt Robinson doesn't have the arm that Peters does. He doesn't have the running ability that that Isaiah Williams has, but he does both. He's a better runner than Peters, and he's a better thrower than Williams. So that's why I've been like the whole camp, like, yeah, he's not out of it. Like, he's, you know, people forget that he was in front of Rivers in the spring. Like, he took the first snaps in the spring game. You know, I had heard from some people I've talked to, I'd heard from some of the players, you know, mumblings that the players say that they thought Robinson would be the starter over Rivers. You know, this is back in like January, February. So I'm just not willing to give up right now. That said, Rod Smith has gotten frustrated with him many times when I've seen it at camp, where Robinson just makes the wrong throw, makes the wrong read, doesn't put enough on a ball. I've seen that several times, and it flutters and it gets picked. And there was that clip that was posted. Beason made an interception. I think the official Twitter chart showed it, and they showed Beason running down the sideline. This is like 9 seconds after the interception, and Rod Smith comes into view, and he's still like throwing his hat and throwing a fit. Like, why did you throw that ball? What could you possibly be thinking for throwing it there? Your read was this, you know. And so if he can't turn off the turnovers, he won't play. But skill wise, I still think it's a three-horse race.
Now, I just want to bring this up because you mentioned Rod. I feel like it's been a hypothetical and talked about between some Alade fans whether or not Rod, say Lovey, this isn't Lovey's year, he retires or something happens, gets fired. Do you think Rod could be our next head coach? You think he's a serious candidate for the Alade head coaching job?
I don't think so because I think Whitman would. Okay, so Whitman takes the job in February, late February, early March, and immediately lets Cubitt go and hires Lovey, which was his best option at the time. The college window was closed, and so he went with an NFL coach that had just been fired by Tampa 2 months prior. But you know, his best move, a Chicago guy, this is what he could do. If Lovey doesn't work out, let's say this season, I feel like Whitman wants to get deep into the real college carousel. I think he would look at coordinators from other schools. I think he would look at, you know, the next big names. I just think he would throw open a pretty wide search. I think he would want, you know, you know, they say athletic directors get two shots at hiring a football coach. And if that's true and he got a second shot at hiring a football coach, I think he would look nationwide. And I'm not sure Rod, with no head coaching experience, would be that guy. So I like Coach Smith and Rod Smith, and I like what he's done with this offense, but I don't think I could see that.
Okay, yeah, I just want to throw that hypothetical out. I'm sorry to get a little distracted there. But let's talk about Peters, I feel like, for a little bit. Do you feel like the play calling has been a little bit different for him and in the future than what Robinson will run or Williams?
Somebody I was talking with at practice, I can't remember who it was because I want to give him credit because this was their thought, said that the offense with Peters is very similar to the offense with MJ Rivers. I mean, MJ Rivers could run, but he was more of a pocket quarterback. And the offense changed a little bit. Like, you know, I think we even saw it in the what game did I guess Bush got hurt in the Western Illinois game and Rivers came in. Mm-hmm. I think we saw it in that game that there was one offense when Bush was in there and it changed a little bit with Rivers and there wasn't as much read option and there wasn't as much of all this stuff. So I think that's, I wish I could credit the person who made that observation, but I think that's a very astute observation that the offense with Peters looks like MJ Rivers, which we saw a lot. I mean, he started four games and, you know, we saw a fair bit of that, but the offense with Williams and with Robinson, I think would look more like the AJ Bush offense last year. And we should note those were the games where with Bush as a running threat, Reggie Corbin really went wild. So that's obviously the concern, is if the quarterback isn't a running threat, a read option really isn't much of an option if everybody, including the defensive coordinator, knows that the quarterback's not going to pull it and keep it. So that's the big concern there, as it was with MJ Rivers.
Yeah, and talking about some other stuff, Robert, you compared this team to the 2014 team. Where do you think some of those like similarities lie? I know it's the West Lunt. Peters is kind of similar, but what else other than that do you think kind of shows in this 2019 team?
Yeah, that was an interesting camp. Like most people at this camp obviously think Peters is going to win the job. He's started Big Ten games before. He's a junior. You know, he's 21 years old against a couple 19, 18-year-olds. You know, most people are thinking, okay, at least from the first game, it's going to be Peters. And that's how people felt about Blunt in 2014. He had transferred in 2013, sat out the year, learned the offense. Here he comes, a four-star transfer. He's going to be the guy. But if you remember, Aaron Bailey was here in 2014. Mm-hmm. Aaron Bailey had done some nice things in 2013. And so there was a little bit of like, man, this Bailey kid with the ball in his hand is electric. And wouldn't this offense run better if that was the guy? So there was that murmur at camp. And then there's that Riley O'Toole, who ended up being the guy at the end of the season, who, you know, came in the middle of the Penn State game, beat Penn State, and then beat Northwestern with a great game the final week to put the team in a bowl. And, you know, that could easily be Matt Robinson. O'Toole is in that same chair. He can, you know, run better than Lunt. He can throw better than Bailey, but he's not going to run like Bailey or throw like Lunt. So, you know, that's why it feels so similar to 2014. You know, it feels like, you know, I wrote this the other day, like the scary side of that is 2014 basically came down to the field goal in the Penn State game. And if David Reisner misses that field goal, Illinois goes 5-7, isn't in the bowl, and everything is different. So I just feel like this is going to be one of those seasons where a couple plays and a couple games are going to determine things north or south.
Yeah, absolutely. And talking about a big game, I remember back when Lovie got hired, you mentioned the Michigan game being potentially his big career game.
Yes.
You think that's still the case this year?
God, I have answered this question so many times. I'm afraid of it. I'll just be honest. Like, okay, so Lovie got hired. I knew the roster cliff coming after that season. There were 24 seniors on that team, and then there was just kind of nothing freshman had gone the JUCO route. He had like first three classes, and he had 22 JUCOs. When you do that, you either have to follow them with JUCOs, or you're going to have an extremely young team if you're starting out with a high schooler. So I think anybody looking at the roster when Lovie was hired said, okay, 2017 is going to be a bit of a disaster. Don't know how 2016 will go. He's got 4 months to throw something together here, March until August. But 2017, there's a steep cliff coming. And so because of that, like I just started mapping out all the seasons. And I thought, okay, 2017, not going to happen. 2018, that's when it starts to come back together. 2019 is the year. I'm going to call my shot. I'm going to pick the game. We played Michigan in 2019. So in my Twitter bio, I put October 12th, 2019. And people would start tapping upon it, and you would just tweet me like, hey, what does October 12th, 2019 mean? And I'm like, in 3 years, Illinois football has its moment. October 12th, 2019. We get revenge for September 23rd of 2000, which was the game that started replay in college football because of a Michigan fumble that wasn't called and an Illinois fumble that shouldn't have been called. And so, like, that's hung over the program for so long. When I got to interview Whitman when he was hired, I'm like, let's talk September 23rd, 2000. You played in that game. That game broke Illinois football. How are we going to fix it? So I've just been building all of this toward, okay, Michigan game 2019, it better be a night game. We're going to exercise the demons, and we're gonna regain our footing as somebody to be dealt with the Big Ten West. And so now last season, like, I'm thinking, okay, first half of last season is really rough, but I get it. We beat Minnesota, and it's like, okay, this is starting to, I can start to see it. We can get to 5 wins. Okay, yeah, like, I can see this going. And then 63-0 happened on senior day. And I'm like, okay, if you're losing to 63-0 to Iowa in the second to last game of your third season, I don't think you're beating Michigan 5 games later. I don't think it's going to happen. And so now, obviously, people reach out to me all the time. October 12th, is it really going to happen? You still standing by October 12th? And I fear the date because Michigan's really good, and we're not there yet. And 2 games ago, we lost to Iowa 63-0 at home. And I'm worried. So I'm going to stand by it. I'm leaving it in my Twitter bio. I called my shot. I'm sticking to it. I've had my hotel room booked forever. I'm taking the whole weekend. I'm still holding out hope it would be a night game, but I am frightened that it's going to be like my Twitter bio will be updated to say like Michigan 49, Illinois 16.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun game. I will say this, and you mentioned like the worry. Obviously, do you think like is there all because. A lot of fans feel like you know, Lovie isn't the answer, and he wasn't our guy, and he's going to get fired this year. Do you think his career is really salvageable at Illinois?
I do. The flip side of all of this is the youth. Not only did the cliff happen in 2017, but so I'll just walk you through my thoughts toward all this. Mm-hmm. I come home from camp 2 years ago right now, 2017, and I'm just reeling. And I'm texting friends, and I'm like, honestly, I think there might be 14 true freshmen who play this year. Like, this is going to be, like, one of the youngest college football teams anyone has ever seen. Lovie is completely ignoring the Beckman and Kubik recruits, and, like, if I can play my guys, I'm playing my guys. And I'm like, I don't think we're going to win 2 games. Like, I can't even see 1 win. If we're playing a bunch of 18-year-olds, like, it's like playing your freshman team in high school against some varsity team. I don't care if it's a horrible varsity team. The freshmen are going to lose. They're going to get destroyed. Mm. Like, no team of 18-year-olds can beat a team of 22-year-olds. I don't care if you're Alabama. It's not going to happen. And so as it turns out, they play 22 freshmen. 22 of the 25 players in that class, actually 21 of the scholarship guys, plus Michael Marquez, so 22 true freshmen, played that year. I still maintain 2017 Illinois is the youngest college football team I could find in the last 15 years. I spent so much time researching this, trying to find another team that started that many true freshmen, that played that many sophomores, that had that few juniors and seniors on the field. I just couldn't find it. There was a Baylor team that came close, but that was as close as I could get. And so when you have that, then I step back and say, okay, I see what they're doing here. Like, this is a wholesale, I'm starting over. We're going to, you know, we're tossing everything out, and we're just going to build up. And so I'm like, okay, then I don't think 2018 is going to be a win. You know, I had originally thought it would be decent season 2016, fall off the cliff in 2017, start building it back in 2018, 2019, take a leap. When you go that young, 2017 and 2018 basically have zero chance. But that also means 2019 and 2020 could be one of the more experienced teams in all of college football. And I have made this argument. Sorry I'm going so long on this, but this is my passionate thing.
No problem.
I've made this argument that in 2020, if you have, in 2017, the youngest team in college football in the last 15 years, if you keep those guys around, by 2020, just by math, you're going to have one of the most experienced teams in the history of college football. If nobody plays that many freshmen, nobody's ever going to have 12, 15 guys that have 30-plus starts. It just doesn't happen. Because to do that, you'd have to ignore all your upperclassmen and start playing freshmen one year. That's the only way to get to that math. So the thing I've said is, like, okay, I get what they're doing. It's going to look awful for a while, but then it should start to click. Now, it's not guaranteed to click. It doesn't mean once those guys get older, they're the greatest college football team. It just means you're going to have, I mean, Phil Steele does this chart, right? Phil Steele, I don't know if you're familiar with his magazine, but he does this experience chart where it's not just starts. It's like, how much experience do you have coming back? The guys that play, the guys that were part, the guys that were lettermen that were on the field, how many of them are coming back? You know, he has this whole formula. You know, Illinois was something like 128 in 2017. They're something like number 100 last year. This year, they're number 31, I think, on the chart. And next year, I swear, I don't see any way it's not possible, they'll be number one on the chart. It'll be the most experienced team. Does that mean you win? I don't know. So if the question is, can Lovey redeem it? He would tell you this was the whole plan. We sacrificed 2017 in order to get this, save up this turbo boost for 2019 and 2020. So if it does work, that's why it's worked. They counted on experience being the difference and being the thing that propelled the team forward. If it doesn't work, bad schemes, a defense that could be figured out easily, there's a whole bunch of ways it can't work. But that would be the reason that it does.
All right. Well, thanks, Robert. I love that because you're totally right. I think the experience is a huge thing. But, like, considering, like, we lost Bennett, like, if you could say, like, some of the guys, like Bennett was a huge – the fact that we had to because, you know, obviously he broke team rules a bunch of times. You can't really keep him on. But there's – I feel like and now that – oh, man, I'm drawing a blank.
Dorsey
and, you know, other guys aren't on the team anymore. That I feels a little bit like that. But looking at the depth chart, that offensive line will be mostly together. And two big defensive ends, Gay and Carney, will be seniors next year. So certainly that is possible. But, man.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the downer to that whole thing is – who were the three best freshmen in 2017? It was easily Bobby Rountree, Lewis Dorsey, and Bennett Williams. And if you had all three of those, my outlook on this season would be different. So without those three guys, that's a big chunk missing, a really big chunk of what you were hoping to see in 4 years.
Right, but still, obviously, experience will be there, and we'll see, because at the end of the day, you know, Lovey might look like a real genius after it's all said and done. I just want to talk about one final thing, too, the linebackers, because I feel like this is the part where it really needs to come together on the defense. Hansen, I feel like some of the reports that he hasn't been as great as we hope he would be in training camp. Is that true?
No, I think he's been fine. I don't think he's I think he's always going to be kind of limited physically. Like, he's not some crazy athlete that Ohio State recruits at linebacker or even Iowa. But I think he'll be perfectly fine. He's got great instincts. So he might not, like, show it in practice like a Jay Layman would have shown it in practice, or even Jonathan Brown 8 years ago or something like that. But I think he can be perfectly good in his role. I'm not too worried about Hanson.
And then the other big guy, Miller Eifler. How big of a game changer do you think he's going to be this year, or can he be?
If I were to pick a linebacker that would be a game changer this year, I'm probably saying Dele Harden. Mm-hmm. Because he's had some injury issues, and hopefully those are behind him. But like somebody asked me a couple months ago, like, okay, give me a name that by the end of the season it's going to be like, wow, where's that guy been? You know, where did that come from? Because, you know, like Steve Hall in 2013 suddenly is like all Big Ten wide receiver. Like, where did that come from? Mm-hmm. My answer for that would be Dele Harden. Like, I think he's a great kid. He's a really smart kid. He's really bright and understands the defense, and Lovey loves that, to have somebody who knows the defense in the center. He can kind of be the quarterback back there. And I just think he could maybe have that season. Now, again, he's had an injury issue each of the 3 years he's played. So, you know, that could fall apart quickly. But, you know, Eifler, crazy athlete. Crazy, like, fast and big and that type of thing. It's just, he didn't start playing football till his senior year in high school, and then he had 2 years at Washington and 1 year redshirting here, so it's awful rough for a guy like that to understand a complex college defense. So he's just going to need plays and reps to understand, oh, I did this wrong, and watch film and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. So for Eifler, I would say this is like a learning year, and then hopefully he can have a huge season next year.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have. Robert, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, for sharing a lot about Illini football this year. It's good to interview somebody who's been at training camp. So thank you.
You got it. I apologize for getting long-winded on certain questions, but that's just how I am.
Oh, no. That's awesome. I love to hear it. Love to hear the Illini excitement. Now I'm so pumped for the season. I can't wait to
Yeah.
Be a black guy.
Well, we'll get to the second quarter of Akron, and we'll all be depressed again, and yeah, we'll forget why we do this. So.
Exactly. All right. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Big thank you to Robert from Illini Board. After that interview, I was ready to run through a wall, because this Illini football team now just got me so excited. Like, the season's really up for grabs. And the best point I think he made in that podcast was that in 2017, we started so many freshmen. We were probably, he says, the youngest team probably ever in college football. And now, thinking a couple years later, we'll now be one of the most experienced teams in college football. So that I think that's really exciting. So I'm glad he brought that up. Anyways. Yeah.
And it's different, too, because they're still a young team because they haven't experienced success yet. So they're still young in that sense, but they know the system. They're familiar with the head coach, the offensive coordinator, and that. So they're experienced in the system of Illinois football, but they're still yet to taste some of that success, so they still should have that drive to be near the top of the Big Ten. So it should be interesting to combine those two kind of aspects and hope for the best with this Illini team.
Yeah, exactly. And now, because it is superlative season and there hasn't been a whole lot of news, we thought we'd do a superlative of our own. So, Anthony, what is the question this week?
Yeah, so I was talking to my brother today. Me and my brother are both caddies at Ridgemore Country Club in Chicago. And a couple of our Evans Scholar friends got to caddy for some of the professionals today at the BMW Championship. And there was an Evans Scholar, I believe, from Oregon that got to caddy for Tiger Woods. And it got me and my brother talking, who is the athlete of our generation? Like, when you think of our generation, who's the guy that comes to mind? For my brother, he thinks it's Tiger Woods. I said it was LeBron James or maybe even Tom Brady. What do you think, Pat?
Yeah, I feel like I got to agree with you on there. Tiger Woods, the only thing is, I feel like growing up, he had a lot of success in the early thousands. So we obviously remember him from that. But like when it comes to like the tens, the 2010s, like his success decreased. Whereas like the guy who I always imagined and remember growing up was LeBron James, because on SportsCenter he'd be on almost every day. His success came in the tens, and he also had early success in the thousands. So I feel like when you encompass all of that and how long he's been in the league, I feel like it's LeBron James. But like Tom Brady is the GOAT in football, which is arguably the greatest or the biggest, most popular sport in America. So I feel like Tom Brady's in our fair point. The other one I wanted to mention, because I feel like he's so underrated, and the biggest issue with the MLB is that this guy isn't on a good team, is that it's Mike Trout, maybe. You know, Mike Trout might be one of the greatest baseball players of all time, but the fact that, you know, the MLB doesn't really advertise him enough, or that he's on the Angels, who don't win enough games ever, that he isn't really popular. So I feel like his name needs to be thrown in the mix as well.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I brought him up to my brother as well. I think when you think our generation, you think early thousands through now, and he kind of got started like 11, 12. But, I mean, he's already got the resume of a Hall of Famer, all-time great type. So he's definitely in that conversation. And now that we got talking about it, I thought of another guy you could throw in there, Michael Phelps.
Exactly. There's another name. I mean, when did he start? 2004 was when he started up, and then 2008, 2012, and then the 2016 Olympics was the one where people were like, "Ah, he's kind of old," and he still really surprised a lot of people. So, yeah, that's another great one. And two, you know who you know, we mentioned all guys here, and you know, her name certainly should be mentioned between those three, four guys is Serena Williams.
Oh, definitely.
You know, she's one of the greatest athletes, one of the greatest stories of all time when she got, you know, really sick and couldn't play and then came back and then just won a bunch of tournaments. So, you know,
or
along with her.
Or even played in a tournament pregnant, too. That's insane as well.
Right. I mean, she's just one of the greatest of all times. And you know, I bummed I didn't even think of her name earlier, but certainly Serena Williams should be in there. But, you know, say I were to rank those guys, I'd probably do LeBron James, Serena Williams, and then Tom Brady.
Tiger's not even top three for you.
Tiger's not top three.
And I think we named five or six incredible athletes there that you could rank. You got LeBron, you got Tiger, you got Tom Brady, you got Michael Phelps, Mike Trout, and Serena Williams. And I think if you look at that list, Tiger might be six. And it's not only because of those other five having superior athletics during the time, they're also just better people than him.
Yeah, I mean surely the perception there is definitely helpful for some of the other guys too. And I mean, you could throw Tiger in that too, don't you think?
Yeah,
in terms of perception. I mean, once, you know, he had a lot of drama come into his life as well, but yeah, I think LeBron's legacy is definitely a positive one. So is Serena's. And you know, Phelps had those issues in 2008 where it was, what, he got caught for using marijuana, which, I mean, is now illegal in a bunch of states. So I don't know how much that's going to really play into his legacy. But
and Brady with the deflate gate and all that stuff.
Right. And you know, he's the villain. He's the bad guy. And I think LeBron James has kind of shaken the bad guy vibe a little bit.
And, I mean, Mike Trout's just been a golden boy his entire career. Absolutely
right.
Nothing negative about him ever.
Yeah. So, and Serena Williams in that boat as well.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I think you're right. But I like your list too, but I just don't think Tiger Woods is in my top three.
Yeah, if you guys want to vote, check out my Twitter page. I have it on a poll there at @Ant_Pasquale3. I'm interested to see what you guys are thinking. Right now, through 25 votes, LeBron has 58%, Tom Brady has 25%, and Tiger Woods has 17%. The other category is 0. But after mentioning Michael Phelps, Serena Williams, Mike Trout, I think that other might end up even winning. So if you guys want to vote, go check it out. Patrick, you got to check it out too.
I will. Absolutely. I'll put my 2 cents in. And that's going to do it for this episode of Oski Talk. Make sure you guys subscribe. We're still fixing a couple things with Spotify and Apple, but we should be up on those shortly, so stay tuned. And thanks for listening, guys. That'll do it. And thank you to Robert as well for coming on this episode. We really, really thankful that he gets come on and then really hype us up for the football season. But for Anthony Pasquality and Patrick Catazone, this has been Oski Talk. Stay tuned.